I'm Brandi Cruz coming up today on Undivided. Well, it was only a matter of time. Attorney General Bob Ferguson's campaign for governor says we are cut out. Also, a large school district in our state announces major cuts, citing a drop in enrollment. And we'll give you a tutorial on how to get around Instagram's political content blocker. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A lot to get to today. I had to talk about this bridge collapse, though. The Baltimore Francis Scott Key Bridge. I mean, I've already been, every time a bridge collapses, it's kind of like when a plane collapses. I mean, it's rare, right? But it freaks you out because you go over them. And I mean, we had the I-5 bridge collapse and all that. So you have some video of it?
Yeah, I do.
So apparently there was this giant container ship that was having a malfunction and knew it was going to hit this bridge. So they radioed it in, you know, tried to get the cars to stop going across the bridge and were trying, but they knew like this was coming. And you could almost see the container ship. It had like a couple blackouts, like the lights went off, went back on, went off, went back on. And it was insane to see the, you know, it hits this major pillar, obviously, of the bridge. And then how quickly the whole thing was just like horrifying. And they're looking for some people. So it does appear as if there are going to be a number of casualties.
I think they've said they got most of the cars off. There were a few cars that might have gone down, but it sounds like some of the workers were on there because there was construction and they had it down to one lane or something. So there's maybe six or seven people. They're not sure.
That's terrifying.
There's also this time-lapse one, which is pretty fascinating, I think, because you can see the ship come in, the lights going on and off, because I'm sure they're working on it and they're trying to
like
kill
fix
it.
Whatever's going on, right?
Or just kill all of the
Because you
engines.
See the cars going over. Like, that's a busy bridge.
Yep. And then they kind of slow down because they're trying to stop them.
Oh my gosh, the horror of that. It's awful.
And then it hits.
It hits and it just drops. Yeah, that's horrifying. It kind of freaks me out that you can have like a bridge in our modern technology and all of that and architectural improvements and one of them gets hit. I know it's a giant container ship. Like I've been on one of those container ships. They're freaking huge. You can't even appreciate it unless you're in fact, I had to climb up a ladder in the middle of Puget Sound onto a container ship for a story once. So you don't appreciate how big they are until you're like right up to it. But the fact that it's like one, that there's no failsafe, I guess. Is that weird for me to believe that there should be some sort of failsafe that the whole thing wouldn't collapse like that? So mortifying. But anyway, I just had to play that video because we're watching what happened. All right. I guess it was only a matter of time, Nicole. Bob is big, big mad this time. Huge mad. So a little bit of context. And look, fine. I mean, I have endorsed Dave Riker. Do I expect Bob Ferguson to come on this show? Probably not. I mean, he's welcome. He just, you know, unveiled his public safety plan. If he wants to come talk about it with someone who's very pro public safety and who's been critical of him, I think that would be great. I'd do a fair interview with him. So look, do I expect his campaign to be just chomping at the bit to respond to our emails? No. But we got a very interesting email. And just to provide sort of the background if you weren't watching the show yesterday or last week. So Bob Ferguson comes out with this public safety plan, and it's all he's talking about right now because, come on, he's very concerned about how bad public safety is, his record on public safety, etc. So now he's like, oh, I am the candidate for public safety. And he gives this public safety plan first to King 5 News. And we played this clip last week, and at the end of it, something caught our attention. Something, it just seemed like a throwaway line at the end of the story from Drew Mickelson, the reporter with King 5.
Now, some of those same critics say that the police restrictions on those police pursuits are what have caused this increase in crime in the state. And just this month, legislators voted to roll back those restrictions. Bob Ferguson says that is a good idea, and he noted he was not a supporter of those original restrictions when they were passed here back in 2021.
Huh. So I thought he wasn't a supporter of what his fellow Democrats did in 2021 in dramatically limiting police pursuits. I felt like I'm clued in enough where I would remember that. I would have given him credit for speaking out against those police pursuit changes. you know, not only in 2021, but even if he had said it in 2022 while people were trying to fix it, or even 2023, I would have taken any of the above. I mean, 1, 2, 3, 3.5 years for him to speak out about what his party did to public safety in the state. And so that just didn't ring true to me. And so I told Nicole, I mean, look, we're a political opinion show, right? But I still care about getting things factually accurate. If I didn't, then what good would I be? And so I have a negative opinion of Bob Ferguson and what he would do as governor, but I try to couch that opinion in factual information. And so I told Nicole, I said, I could be wrong, but I really don't believe that Bob Ferguson has said anything about being opposed to those police pursuit changes. But in fairness and in the interest of accuracy, let's reach out to his campaign and just ask them if they could simply provide us with what was the basis for King Five's statement there. So I'm gonna read Nicole's email and the response that we got from the Ferguson campaign. Nicole, this is Nicole's voice, that's my voice. Hello, I produce the Undivided with Brandi Cruz podcast. We recently heard the Attorney General mention via King Five that he didn't support the police pursuit policy that was recently rolled back. Was this something he shared or vocalized? If so, when and where? Thank you, Nicole. All right, let's give him a chance to, you know, hey, if Brandy's wrong, I even said on the show, if I'm wrong about that, I'll admit I'm wrong. I don't hear and read everything, whatever it is. So this is the response back from Bailey with the Bob Ferguson campaign. Hi, Nicole. A.G. Ferguson did not support HB 1054, which was the rollback bill in 2021. Here's the statement that several media have received from earlier this month in March. Quote, I support the legislature's decision to pass these three initiatives. Specifically, the police pursuit changes will help law enforcement. So the quote they're providing us there doesn't speak at all to their claim that he didn't support the bill initially or that he spoke out about it. But here's the kicker from Bailey with A.G. Ferguson's campaign. Moving forward, the Ferguson campaign won't be responding to requests from Brandi Cruz, given her public support for another candidate in the race for governor. I am shocked they put that in writing. Like, I don't expect you necessarily to respond. Even though I'm giving you an opportunity to prove that what you're saying is true, don't you think if it's true, you'd take advantage of that opportunity and be like, yeah, Brandi, you were wrong. Here are all these examples of Bob Ferguson coming out and saying he was not in support of the police pursuit rollbacks. Because you can't say you weren't in support of it if you just, what, thought it in your brain or wrote it in your journal and didn't say anything about it publicly. That's very different. So anyway, look, there's a couple things about this, but this is a glimpse at what a Bob Ferguson governorship would look like. He's already proven he has no interest in transparency. We see that all the time with some of the dings his office has gotten on the public records front, etc. But think about that sentence. Moving forward, the Ferguson campaign won't be responding to requests from Brandi Cruz, given her public support for another candidate in the race for governor. So are you telling me that then if the Seattle Times editorial board endorses Dave Reichert, which I think is a distinct possibility, that the campaign won't speak to the Seattle Times editorial board? That's how I would take that to mean if it's a plain reading. Does that mean that they're not going to respond to other media figures who have endorsed other candidates publicly? Like, I think Ari Hoffman came out in support of Dave Reichert. So if you're making this rule, is it just for me because I've been particularly hard on Bob Ferguson and you're kind of sour about it? Or is it for everybody in the media who would dare to endorse or support publicly someone who's not Bob Ferguson? Because that's going to be a slippery slope. Is it every editorial board in the state that might issue an endorsement in this race? What if I had endorsed Mark Mullett? Would that be different? Or is it just that it's a Republican? So Nicole did follow up and just say, hey, you know, giving him yet another opportunity just to say, this, you know, the quote you provided doesn't speak to whether he was against vocally, verbally, publicly, the police pursuit rollback, HB 1054. So are we missing something? And Nicole, you spent how long yesterday combing the internet?
I did. I spent a couple hours at least combing the internet trying to find anywhere that might mention him supporting or not supporting that House bill in 2021.
Yeah.
And I found him asked about it.
Right.
And he deflected and said, it's my job to enforce.
Right. Which I think is proof that he never spoke out against it. Because this, you found something from some article in Eastern Washington from January 2023 that basically said, because we were still embroiled in the issues with police pursuit, and he just punted and said, well, that's not my job to take a position. It's just my job to enforce the law.
But he had a position on the use of force.
Right. So because the use of force one about that was bundled in, that's fine. But police pursuit's no big deal. So it's just a lie. Let's just call it what it is. If they had an example of Bob Ferguson actually coming out, as Drew Mickelson said, and saying verbally taking a position on police pursuits, then they would send it to us. They wouldn't send us an email saying, moving forward, the Ferguson campaign won't be responding to requests from Brandi Cruz. We gave you an opportunity. We did our job, even though we're political commentators. We did our job journalistically to go to you to try to confirm something that was said about Bob Ferguson's position. And not only did you not confirm it and provide us with a quote that doesn't answer the question that we're asking, but then you said you're not going to be responding to any further requests for comment. And Nicole, I said, you know, just... And she sent an email back and basically said, look, you can respond or not respond to future things, but we still feel an obligation, even if we're knocking Bob, to do it factually. So we'll continue to reach out and give you opportunities to clarify, like I said, I would have apologized. I would have apologized if they were like, yeah, here it is. And Bob's out in 2021 saying, oh, no, on this police pursuit thing. Totally so he might have
thought that. I'm actually pretty convinced that he thought that, because otherwise he would have mentioned that he didn't support it, but he didn't want to vocalize that.
No, obviously. He didn't want to vocalize anything. And that's the problem. And that has been the problem with Bob Ferguson and with Jay Inslee. They don't want to do what's right in the moment, because the only thing that they consider are political implications and ramifications. Bob Ferguson, even if he was opposed to rolling back police pursuits, he didn't want to come out and say it publicly because he knew he was about to run for governor. And he knows he needs his progressive base, and it was in the middle of this whole anti-police craze. And so, of course, well, he's like, I can't go on the record of doing that. And now he wants to come out 3 years later and say, I didn't support that. And then King Five's going to just say it on the air. Bob Ferguson didn't support it. Show me the evidence. It's easy now, because now it's politically palatable. And now you're trying to act like a moderate in an election year. So, yeah, we are.
And we also asked if they were going to ice out the other.
Right. I said that. I said, are you going to ice out Ori Hoffman? I don't know if John Carlson is a Doris Reichard. But, you know, you have people who work for bona fide media outlets who take positions on candidates. You have editorial boards and editorial writers who take positions on candidates and on issues. So if it's your assertion that what I'm too mean, I've endorsed Dave and donated to his campaign. So is that the line for you? I'm also, does this extend into your governorship if you're elected? Can people who supported Mark Mullett or Dave Reichert during your campaign can they not? But I mean, what is that blackout just going to end if he's elected? Sounds like someone's not going to be a governor for everyone. Not that that's a particular surprise, but this is concerning stuff in all seriousness. I mean, you know, he doesn't have to respond to me. That's fine. It's not as if like that makes or breaks anything that I'm going to say. I'm going to give him opportunities to correct the record. If they don't want to take that, I have to assume that there's no record to be corrected. But just it speaks to his disdain for people who disagree with him politically. His thin skin, which he's notorious for, people, Democrats and Republicans know, he's notoriously thin-skinned. He holds grudges. You want to be the governor of the state of Washington. If your campaign can't handle some political commentators and talking heads criticizing your record, I got to be honest, I just don't think you're up to the task of running an entire state that has a bunch of crises going on. So we're just going to get another thin-skinned governor who doesn't want to take criticism, who hates people who criticize him, who lashes out at the media, that hides documents, doesn't want to be transparent or whatever it is. Now, at least Governor Inslee, though, I think they've been pretty good on the public records front. Like, that's the one thing I'll give Governor Inslee, is he hasn't used legislative privilege or, you know, executive privilege, as it's called for him. And his office is usually pretty good at getting us public records. So I'm not saying behind the scenes, like, I don't know, but I've never had issues with him on that front. But Bob has a track record of that. So arguably, he's going to be much worse when it comes to transparency than Bob Ferguson is, or than Jay Inslee is. So we're cut out. Are you hurt, Nicole? Are your feelings hurt?
Well, they didn't say I was iced out, so maybe I'll just rephrase things when I send my notes.
Yeah. This is not Brandi Cruz. This is Nicole Thompson. Hey, if you don't want to set the record straight on things, I gave you an opportunity to have me apologize on the air for wrongly thinking something about Bob. And now you've just confirmed what I believed, which is he never said jack about the police pursuit law and how dangerous it would be. Okay. This next story is really frustrating. And, you know, look, I think, how do I want to start this without being too, like, harsh? No one deserves to be killed in cold blood. Maybe not no one, but you know what I mean. I mean, there might be some egregious regardless, sex offenders and all that stuff.
Regardless of their background and history, right. This is a tragedy.
Yeah, I'm never going to celebrate or like say that someone who's a gang member who's 16 years old deserves to be killed. That's a life cut short. There are people who go on to turn their lives around and go down a different path. And so we had mentioned on the show yesterday this bizarre story with two 16-year-olds. One found along I-5 in Seattle one night, and then the next morning, a little ways away, a second one found. They were both shot to death, and then police came out and said they knew each other. So now there's this, okay, what's going on here? And that investigation is still underway. What I found fascinating, because in my mind, having an ounce of common sense, and also having covered crime and justice, I've got two 16-year-old Black youth shot, apparently execution style, dumped on the side of an interstate. They knew each other, you know, according to police. I'm thinking gang. That's the first thing. I mean, come on. That's the first thing that goes through my mind. I'm thinking gang. And then, and I didn't know, you know, I was like, maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. So I didn't, that's why I didn't say it on the show yesterday that these are probably gang members. I didn't jump to that conclusion. And then we see how the media covers this. And again, it's sad. These are two 16-year-olds. Families are without them. Like, that is devastating, regardless of the circumstances. But just as an example, so remember, these are two 16-year-olds. All over, Cairo 7, Como, Fox 13, their coverage of this has pictures of these two homicide victims as little kids. You know, Cairo 7, questions about the murders of two best friends, their bodies found hours apart on I-5 in North Seattle, families grieving the murders of two best friends, their bodies found a day apart on I-5, beloved Seattle teens shooting death, shrouded in mystery, mourned by community. So I'm thinking, why are they using pictures of these? There's one, you know, with one of the kids sitting on his mom's lap in like a, you know, cap and gown sort of thing, like
from a preschool
graduation or something. I'm like, this is just interesting.
And then they said they were great students.
So maybe the reason why the photos of them when they were younger were used is because this is what photos of them more recently look like. This is allegedly, according to multiple sources, it was first put out by Safe Seattle. I then had a law enforcement source this morning that confirmed that this is a picture of the two 16-year-olds who were found along I-5, holding guns, pointing guns at the camera lens. So then, of course, I'm like, okay, that obviously kind of reinforces what my first thought about this was. And not only does my law enforcement source confirm that these two 16-year-olds were active gang members, but that one of them is currently suspected in a homicide case. And that's hasn't been released publicly yet. So you're hearing about that here for the first time. So I want to go back again. Nicole, can you flip back to the pictures that were used by all the news agencies of these two 16-year-olds as little kids being characterized as beloved Seattle teens, as good students. And look, I'm sure they were loved by people, 100%. I'm sure the community is mourning. It's devastating that two 16-year-olds would be killed in that way. And there's so much we don't know about it.
I also understand why you'd want to remember him like that.
100%. Like, however, I want to remember him as innocent little kids, right?
However, are you helping the problem?
Giving cover? And also, that's just journalistic malpractice. Like, to paint it as, oh, these, like, what, honor students found dead on the side of the road. When police suspect, any good reporter doing their due diligence would know off the bat something's up here, would talk to their law enforcement sources before they did this flowery story about these, like, two little tiny kids using these old pictures about this death and not say, hey, gang activity is suspected. Gang activity is suspected. They're getting to the bottom of it. I'm not saying gang activity or a picture of them, you know, when they're around 16 pointing guns at the camera. I'm not saying that that negates their life. I'm not saying that negates the value of their life. I'm not saying that that negates the pain that their family must be going through. What I am saying is that it's part of the story. And to act as if it's not part of the story or to actively ignore that part of the story is why the mainstream media is viewed with such low regard. So we will continue to follow this as more information comes out. And again, it's still a crazy story that you just have two 16-year-olds dumped along the side of the road, shot to death. So I'm also worried, by the way, as we approach summer, we know that gang activity increases in the summer. If these are two gang members, as our law enforcement sources say, who were executed, you don't think that there's going to be some sort of retaliatory effort on their behalf? So when it comes to gang activity, violence begets more violence. So what's going to happen after this? We already have far too many juveniles being killed, mostly because of gang-related activity. We have juveniles out, lawlessness on the roadways, stealing cars, renting 900% increase in armed robberies at gas stations. And then you've got the media who wants to paint it as, oh, just innocent little kids caught up and found dead on the side of the road. It's a freaking mystery. No, it's not a mystery. It's still sad, but let's just be honest about what it is and let's try to hold our system accountable for why it is not doing more earlier on to deter these kids from a life of crime before their parents have to bury them at the young age of 16.
I will say, just back on the media part, King 5 did not change their headline from the original teens found dead type coverage. They did not cover it like the rest of them. So I just giving a little.
Oh, so King 5 hasn't done the sad sack, nope, you know, all flowery. Okay, well, let's not give them too much credit because they could. They could do that.
But I just didn't want to assign it to them.
Hold on. I wanted to see. I was getting a little update on this. Not an update I'm going to share yet, but this is just ridiculous stuff. And it speaks to much, you know, one more thing on this, sorry. And now I'm belaboring the issue, but it used to be like, I get it. There have been stories in the past where it was like, you know, they compare media coverage of a white kid that was killed versus a black kid that was killed. And they'd use like the picture of the white kid at high school graduation and the black kid doing whatever. And people would freak out about that. Like, I get it that, hey, you know, let's use pictures that are appropriate for the news story. So like, if you're talking about somebody who was truly like an innocent victim, like maybe don't drag out some picture of their booking photo from an unrelated arrest and use that as, you know what I mean? But this is too far in the opposite direction. It's ridiculous. All right, really quickly to the Yakima School District. It has approved $14 million in budget cuts. It's going to lay off around 75 staff members. Any guesses as to why? Anybody? Anybody?
You're Nicole? Asking me, I already know.
Yeah, you already know. Nobody wants to go to public schools anymore. The enrollment has not bounced back from the pandemic. And schools, including the Yakima School District, which is a huge school district in Washington State, they were under the mistaken belief that all the people who left in the pandemic, oh, they'll just come back, you know? No, because they found out that they could do it just fine and that it might even be better. It says in this KIMA, do they call it KIMA out there or KIMA? Is it the Yakima Tri-Cities news station? I apologize, Yakima Tri-Cities, if I have said it wrong. I'm going to say KIMA. It says the district approved over $14 million in staff reduction rather than utilize potential reserve funds. The cut equates, which I actually appreciate, and I'll talk about that more in a minute, the cut equates to around 75 and a half district, full district staff members not being brought back for the 2024-2025 school year. As to the reason the district is where it is, the chief financial officer and the superintendent have pointed to declining enrollment as part of the reason without commenting on concerns around mismanaged funds. Part of keeping staff levels up until this point is that the district anticipated a rebound of enrollment after the pandemic. The superintendent said, we did believe, not only here in Yakima, but in the state of Washington and across the country, that students would come back. However, the numbers show that has not happened, as enrollment numbers are projected to fall lower next year, as parents now have more options to educate their kids. And this is the Washington Education Association's like worst nightmare, which I kind of love. I love teachers, so I don't ever want to see teachers lose their job, obviously. But like when you have declining enrollment and you've got to cut budgets and all this stuff, I just, there's a small part of me that celebrates the pain that the Washington Education Union bosses are feeling because they negatively impact so much of what we do.
They bullied people into raises they couldn't afford.
Well, and that's part of it too, is like, oh, you know, when they go on strike for better wages and they say it's for the kids. No, it's not for the kids. Just be honest. You want higher pay. That's fine. You can ask for higher pay, whatever it is, but don't say it's for the kids. And then you've got these huge part of their budgets that are spent on salaries and it's not sustainable. And then you've got kids leaving and you can't justify having that many teachers. And I do appreciate that the Yakima School District didn't decide to dip into reserves to keep those teachers on staff, because that would have been nonsensical. They don't need that many teachers anymore when you have declining enrollment. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, just because I was kind of curious. I think about homeschool all the time if I ever have kids. But I wonder kind of for parents who don't like the public school system but who keep their kids there anyway, why? You know, what is it? So I asked which option of the ones I provided would be the biggest driver in deciding not to homeschool your children. Is it the time commitment? So it's like, I can't do that all day. Or is it your finances? So you have to go to work. You can't be at home homeschooling kids. Is it fear that they might have some social isolation outside of a public school setting? Or is it just you don't know what to teach? Like, how am I supposed to teach my kid? I can't even do math, which is kind of true. I always wonder for homeschool parents, like, do you do the basics or do you skip like the difficult nonsense stuff and just teach them life skills?
They're actually given pretty decent resources. So they get a pretty decent how to do it guide.
Right. And you kind of go step by step and just follow everything. So a lot of you are saying finances and the fact that you have to work would be a big reason why you wouldn't homeschool your kids, which makes sense. I mean, that is, I think, and that's for public school too. Like finances, it's like, I can't afford to send my kid to public school or to private school. I can't afford to leave my job and homeschool my child full time. You know, a two person household, maybe you both have to work. And so then it's just like public school is the other option, unless you had, of course, charter schools where your money could go to a charter school that you were happy with the education. But of course, Democrats in the Washington Education Association simply cannot have that. Let's see here. Jill says, I'm done raising my kids, but my daughter is holding off even having kids for a while due to high interest rates on their mortgage. Her and her husband both have well-paying jobs, so neither could quit to raise kids, and they're concerned about a safe daycare. She wants me to retire from the school district and teach her children, which I just might do when the time comes. Oh, hell yeah. If my mom was a school teacher, I'd be like, Mom, retire and I'll pay you to teach my kids. 100%, Jill. Yeah, take it. That sounds fun. Then you can hang out with your grandkids all day. That's great. Let me see. Danielle says, I selected finances and must work because that is a major factor. However, there is an option that's missing, at least for our household, and that's that there's no way I can get my twins to sit still and listen to me in a teaching capacity. Ideally, I wish we could afford private school, but that's not financially viable for us right now. And with the mass exodus from public to private school, the wait lists are long. Yeah, and I heard that too on the private school front. Like, you had a lot of people who were like, okay, I want my kids out of public school. I can't homeschool them. Then you have this long wait list, even if you can afford a private school. Julie B says, our biggest mistake was sending our children to public school in Washington State. Even though we were involved with the school, we did not understand just how much liberal indoctrination was happening until they were older and expressed their social ideology and where those ideologies originated. Yeah. And I hear people who did homeschool their kids all the time say, you know, get your kids out of, or who went from public school to homeschooling, that they don't regret it. I don't know if I've ever heard a story from a parent who says that they regret switching over to homeschooling. Hannah, let's read one more. I love my daughter dearly and am lucky enough to be able to stay home, but the thought of spending all day with her would not be good for either of us. But if homeschooling works best for your family, I'm totally in support of it.
I think that's one of the reasons that family that was involved in the tragedy last week, but they had a group get together of homeschooling. So one parent did this, another parent did this. Like, they kind of had this group thing going. And I've heard a lot of those stories. And I think there's a few different programs that they've put together where you can have like a 20 family homeschool situation.
Right.
And it's pretty cool.
Look into. That would be easier. Yeah. One more from over on Locals. I clean teeth at I clean teeth. Oh, a little dentist or something. Brandy Cruz, I have 5 kids and have thought about homeschooling many times. My concern is balancing all 5 levels of education for each child. I fear it would take all day and I'd lose all sense of sanity. 1 or 2 kids, fine. 3, maybe 5, heaven help me. Yeah, I agree. 5 kids homeschooling, like just 5 kids in general.
That is a lot. But I do think that that's one of the reasons that people are not going back home to public schools is because they did it and then they realize it's a little more manageable than they thought. And the resources are really good right now and people are realizing it's worth it. But yeah. I think all of those things are what originally kept people from doing it. And now people are like, oh, maybe I can handle it.
You know, if Mike and I have kids, he's significantly older than me. No, I just say that to make him. He's like 8 or 9 years older than me. And I'm like, man, if he wants to retire and sort of do the loose homeschooling where he's just teaching life skills and taking him fishing and hunting, and I'm sure there's some other, you know, actual things you need to do. But Mike, you can be a stay-at-home homeschool dad if you'd like. He'd love that.
Oh, he'd
probably. So anyway, okay. Mm-hmm. Moving on, interesting stuff, though. Something to consider. I just always wonder what it is as a non-parent that kind of stops people. And I think that all those reasons contribute to it a little bit. Okay, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has denied a motion to stop that partisan gerrymandering happening in Central Washington. We'll dive into it first. We are how many months away from summer? 1, 2, what is summer? June? Yeah, 2 months away from summer. You know what that means? If you started the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program today, you could be down 20 to 30 pounds by the time summer starts. Why would you not? If everyone, Nicole laughs at me. I have been pitching the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program for more than a year now. I lost almost 40 pounds on the program. I lost most of that in 2 months. So it's funny because I started in like November, and by the time the new year came, I was like, holy moly, I feel like a different person. And I was just at an event last night down in Lewis County. And I had been down there like 1.5 years ago and everybody's like, you look so good. I'm like, thank you. But honestly, I just feel more confident. I feel better heading into summer and all the things that I've got coming up. And so if you've been thinking about it and you know that you put on some extra weight and you can commit to it, because you do have to commit to the program. It's not magic. Try Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Just start with a free 15-minute consultation. Talk to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team about what the program entails. See if it works for you. I found it very, very easy to follow. And the fact that the weight comes off so quickly gives you extra motivation to keep going. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right, for now, the partisan gerrymandered districts in Central Washington will move forward despite the fact that they disenfranchise Hispanic voters when they were intended to give Hispanic voters more of a say. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Now, only intervention from the United States Supreme Court would stop the gerrymandered districts in Central Washington from moving forth. So if you follow the show, we talked about it last week. It was also the topic of our Sundays with Subscribers episode a couple days ago. So there was a redistricting, which has to happen, right? You got changing populations in places. So you have this bipartisan redistricting commission that meets. They came out with the new district lines. And then there was a lawsuit suggesting that some of these Central Washington districts in like the Yakima area, that they were created in a way that split the Hispanic vote. And it was a violation of the Voter Rights Act. And the weird thing about it was that one of the state senators who, in this effort to, you know, help Hispanic voters, she lost her seat. She's going to lose her seat, State Senator Nikki Torres, because when this lawsuit happened, a judge sided with the argument that the way the redistricting commission had done these districts was going to hurt Hispanic voters. So he approved, you know, these new district lines, which are going to redistrict out the first ever Hispanic state senator. Why? Well, because she happens to be a Republican. So apparently, when you're talking about Hispanic voters being able to get representation, apparently, like, a Republican Latina is not the kind of representation they were thinking of. So from the Washington State Standard, federal appeals court will not block Washington's redrawn legislative district map. The 3-judge panel's decision means new boundaries approved on March 15th under this lawsuit will be in place for this year's elections, but opponents can keep fighting the changes. So basically, the judge makes this decision based on the lawsuit, redraws these districts in a way that redistricts out this Latina state senator who's a Republican. And then there's an appeal to the federal appellate court, and they decide, look, we're going to let this continue to move forward for this year's election. So the only possible reprieve at this point would be the United States Supreme Court. I'll get to a statement from the Senate Minority Leader John Braun in a moment, but I mentioned this Latina state senator, Nikki Torres, and she actually joined us this past Sunday on Sundays with Subscribers.
We kind of had an inkling that the judge was going with that map, and he did. He definitely did. And he said that it was because of the Voting Rights Act and Latino Civic Alliance. You know, this is a mockery of the Voting Rights Act. It has nothing to do with giving the people a voice. This is actually taking away their voice. These new maps, they actually dilute the Latino vote. They don't increase it. They make it lower. It was at 52% the way it is right now in the this current 15th. But in the new map, the 3B map, which becomes the new 14th legislative district, it actually lowers that down to about 50.5 or 51%.
But given that you had this, you know, 70% district with Latinos that elected you, I mean, how are they reacting to it?
A lot are reaching out to me, and those that are considered more moderate are reaching out and saying, this is baloney, you know, this is wrong. You let me know what I can do to help. So I've had people just message me on LinkedIn, on social media, different social media platforms, just saying, hey, how can I help? Because they don't like that at all. And they can see right through it. They're like, wait, what? I thought they were just wanting Latino representation. Now it's shifting to be, oh, no, preferred candidate of choice is a code for Democrat. Because obviously the wrong Latina was elected.
Yeah,
or the wrong type of Latina.
Right. Do you think it has, Latina, the wrong type of Latina, not a Democrat. Do you think, though, it could have blowback for Democrats, for them to say, oh, you know, you had a Latina, but it's not the right type of Latina. So we've, you know, pushed for this map that's going to give us maybe a Democrat Latina.
You know, I think it will give them some blowback, because if I'm not able to run for whatever reason to keep my seat, then I think they will get quite a bit of blowback, because I've been able to work successfully across the aisle and collaborate with the other side on bills. I mean, I had 10 bills make it off the Senate floor this year, and unfortunately only 4 are getting signed, but, you know, it's still a good number, but they were all bipartisan bills. All of my bills were, and you need to be able to work across the aisle. And that is important. And if they're thinking that, oh, we just want a supermajority because we don't want to have to work with anyone across the aisle, that's not democracy.
No, it's not. You can watch that full interview by becoming a subscriber, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. That's State Senator Nikki Torres, who I guess is going to be in her seat for another 2 years. And then, what, I don't know, she has to move to try to run for something. So just a really frustrating situation overall. And look, you know, when there's redistricting, there's bound to be some angst. You're moving lines and all this stuff, and you're going to have both parties who are like, meh, 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 and they want it to be, they're always going to want the best outcome for them, right? And that's why you've got this bipartisan redistricting commission that's supposed to be do the best possible job it can. But I think when you look at this, it's just, I fail to see how a judge could say that in the interest of honoring the Hispanic vote and not splitting it apart, that you would split it in a way that ousts a state senator who's a first-generation American, a Latina. That makes no sense to me. I just can't understand it. So State Senator John Braun said in a statement, he was not mincing words, using Judge Lansing's maps for elections is nothing but judicial gerrymander. Let's be absolutely clear what this is all about. These maps give Democrats a +14 district in central Washington. This has nothing to do with increasing Hispanic power. This increases Democratic power. These gerrymandered maps push 3 Republican senators out of their districts, and I believe 2 Republican representatives. Of course, no Democrat legislators were affected. We can only hope that at some point the United States Supreme Court will right the wrong that has been done in this process. And even Democratic talking heads and political watchers were online saying, oh, this is great for Democrats. So it's like, yeah, of course it is. As Senator Braun points out, you were only displacing Republicans. And so this is about Democrats trying to achieve what the state Democratic Party chair, Shasti Conrad, said a few months ago. Remember? She said, with supermajorities, I can clean up the state constitution. My goal for 2026. So they want to get to supermajority so they can, I don't know, what they would take out of the Constitution, our right to initiative and referendum. What other things do they want to clean up in our state constitution? So it's scary stuff. And it's honestly, as I was saying to Senator Torres, it's kind of offensive for, you know, Democrats believe that they've got like the Hispanic vote and the Black vote on lock. And if they continue to believe that, they're going to be in for a rude awakening. I mean, Nikki Torres was elected by a majority Hispanic district. She's a Republican. She said that her message on public safety and taxation really resonated with that base. And now it's like, well, she's gone. She's Hispanic, but she didn't support the policies that we supported. So I wonder if that's going to have a little bit of a blowback. All right. I want to just touch on this quick out of California. So this is exactly what's going to happen here. And I just don't know how we haven't learned our lessons yet from, like, let's watch California and watch Oregon and the dumb stuff they do. And when it totally backfires on them, let's stop doing it here. It's like we get a warning, right? Like in San Francisco, we saw what was happening in San Francisco. We're like, no, let's do the same stuff anyway. And we totally won't end up with a homeless crisis and a drug crisis. And now California is in an insurance crisis. This from Fox News. California insurance commissioner declares crisis after major State Farm announcement. So it says State Farm announced on March 20th that it would cut 72,000 home and apartment policies in California because of inflation, regulatory costs, and increasing risks from catastrophes. The decision is a blow to California property owners who already suffer under high insurance rates or scarce policy coverage. The commissioner called it a real crisis. And this comes after Allstate in 2022 also paused sale of new home insurance policies in California due to, of course, the wildfires and higher costs of doing business in the state. According to the KCRA, 7 of the 12 largest insurance groups in California have either paused or restricted new homeowners' policies in the past year. And I'm telling you, it's only a matter of time before we're going to hit that crisis level in Washington State. We already know that the insurance industry right now is on thin margins. And as a result, they're being very selective of new policies, and they're being very hard in some instances on current policy owners in assessing their risk. And look, wildfires is one thing. If you live in a wildfire area, you know that you're probably not going to be able to get very easily the home insurance that you want at the cost you want, right? And I don't blame the government necessarily for wildfires and natural disasters. I mean, I think we could do more to thin our forests, et cetera, and all of that. But all these regulatory issues that we've had in Washington, you know, what was the thing they wanted to get rid of credit scores as like a, oh, you can't use your credit scores to determine what your insurance rates would be or your ability to pay or if you're going to pay on time, because that's racist. What do you think that does? All this regulatory stuff. So anyway, even more, as I segue seamlessly into my commercial for First Mark Insurance, we've been telling you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, because in this crazy era we're in politically and uncertainty and crime, if your insurance carrier just decides that you're too much of a liability, you're too much of a risk, you're not making them enough money, and they drop you, do you want to navigate that situation on your own? I don't. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, says he really encourages every person to have an insurance broker on their side.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum, they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now, because it's complicated.
It is complicated. And Mike and I are members of the First Mark family. It's free. So they're going to do the First Mark Challenge with you for free, where you talk to them about your insurance needs. Maybe you need better insurance. Maybe you need a better deal. They're going to go out, shop the market for you. And then if you become a member of the First Mark family, they're going to have your back. If some insurance carrier is like, we're going to drop you. I don't know if it's Dave Taylor who's going to pick up the phone, but somebody's going to pick up the phone and be like, yo, no, you're not. I'm fighting for you. Anyway, I don't know if we'll be able to talk you out of it. But firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you and you never pay them for their services. Complete no-brainer. All right. You see how I segued a news story into an ad? Like, I'm getting very good at my job. I'm just kidding. All right. Dipping outside of Washington State, GOP members of Congress keep resigning. and not just resigning or saying like, hey, I'm not going to run again, like Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers from the 5th District in Washington, which was kind of a shocker for me even. I mean, she's been in that job for a long time, but she's very young still. And she was at a very powerful level, you know, one of the highest ranking Republican women, and decided she's not going to seek reelection. But then you have other Republican members of Congress, like Ken Buck, who's like, not only am I not seeking reelection, but I'm going to leave before my term is done. Here's what he said.
No rearview mirror. Happy to move on. Dysfunctional place.
I mean, you must have been pretty intensely frustrated to not only not run again, but to leave early. And you're not alone, obviously. Mike Gallagher just said he's leaving too.
Yeah. Well, you know, since this Congress started, there have been efforts to impeach the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the President, the Attorney General, the FBI Director, and in fact did impeach the Director of Homeland, Secretary of Homeland Security. Serious problems with setting priorities. We have a very tragic circumstance in Ukraine. We have a spiraling debt. All kinds of out of control problems, and we focus on messaging bills that get us nowhere.
I agree. And Democrats do the same damn thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has been a disaster. And then you have people who went there to actually do the job for the right reasons, and to serve their constituents and to work on the hard problems. And they're like, I don't want to be here. And hell, on the Republican side, you got the like Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Matt Gaetz, and they're just in it to showboat. Like, they're just in it for headlines, and they try to throw chaos in their own party, and their own party's got, you know, controls the House, and they can barely do a damn thing because they're all infighting. And again, the Democrats are not immune from this. I mean, they have used their positions in Congress to spend time on political prosecutions and all of that stuff while our country's in crisis on so many levels. And so this is one of the things I worry about, is that the sane people are going to leave. And then we're going to have the highly idealistic, you know, young people on the left who are coming in, and then, you know, the Marjorie Taylor Greene-esque type people on the right who are going to come in and just sow chaos. And it's like, Congress is going to get more dysfunctional before it gets functional again. I don't know how the depths that we're going to go, but I think this speaks to it. Not only wanting to not run for re-election, but like, let's leave early. He mentioned their Republican Representative Mike Gallagher, who also announced that he would resign early, which leaves the House with a one vote. I believe it is a one vote majority, which it's like you can't even get things done as it is. One vote majority isn't very much. And he also he kind of gave him the middle finger on the way out, because he could have made it easier for Republicans by, you know, in the timing of his exit. But he's like, nah, not going to do it. He says, this from NBC News, his resignation could cause more headaches for House Republicans. Rep. Ken Buck, Colorado, who is also not seeking re-election, is resigning from Congress on Friday, cutting the GOP's minuscule majority to 218 to 213. When Gallagher leaves, the majority would shrink further to 217 to 213, meaning Republicans could only afford a single deflection on any vote if Democrats vote together. Gallagher's decision to leave April 19th also means that there will not be a special election to fill his seat. Under Wisconsin state law, vacancies after the second Tuesday in April are filled in the general election, so Gallagher's replacement will be decided in November, and his seat will remain empty until January. So he very much could have been like, okay, I want to make sure that my Republican seat can be filled as soon as possible with a Republican from my district, so I'm going to resign before the 19th. But no, he's like, I'll just do it and screw him over and leave. And I honestly, that's annoying, right? He's like, you signed up. It's a 2-year freaking job. You signed up for 2 years every time you run for the House of Representatives. You're telling me that you can't just finish out the obligation when you were out campaigning on the trail and asking people for money? Stupid. These are the kind of people. So I don't even feel bad. Like, I don't even feel bad for them. Like, oh, they couldn't do the job they wanted to do because Congress is so dysfunctional. It's like, I get it. But live up to your obligation, because then you're just setting a bad example and you're further deteriorating things. So it's just interesting. All right, you want to talk about Diddy quick?
Yeah, it's wild.
What is, first of all, house is huge.
Do you call him Diddy? I don't call him Diddy.
P. Diddy.
I call him Puff Daddy still.
Are those the same people, P. Diddy and Puff Daddy?
Yes.
What? Wait, P. Diddy and Puff Daddy?
Same person.
Are the same person?
He changed his name. You don't remember that?
No. Wow. All this time, I thought that those were two different
first
people.
First it was Puff Daddy, then it was P. Diddy, and then now it's just Diddy.
Diddy. Yeah. Sean, anyway, so we should.
Sean Puffy.
He's like under investigation, it seems. So I don't know if you guys saw this, but everybody was on social media like, oh my gosh, Diddy's house is getting raided. Mm-hmm. This is from NBC News. Sean Diddy Combs accused of sexual harassment and assault by producer on his latest album. And so there were all these images out there of the, what do you call it, raid? A raid on his home. Okay. And everybody's like, well, we don't really know. It was federal agents. Well, they raided multiple homes tied to Sean Combs in Los Angeles and in Miami. And Homeland Security Investigation said the searches were part of an ongoing investigation. But then you have these other allegations accused of sexual harassment and assault by this producer on his latest album. Again, from NBC News, Sean Diddy Combs was sued Monday in federal court by a producer on his most recent album who accuses the music mogul of sexually harassing, drugging, and threatening him over more than a year. The producer, Rodney Little Rod Jones, says in the lawsuit that he lived and traveled with Combs from September 2022 to November 2023, during which time he recorded hours of video and audio of Combs, his staff, and others, quote, engaging in serious illegal activity. Among the allegations is that Combs forced Jones to procure sex workers and pressured him to engage in unwelcomed sex acts with them, and others that Combs gave laced alcoholic beverages to people who attended parties at his homes. The lawsuit includes what it says are screenshots from gatherings hosted at Combs' homes that included underage girls and sex workers, some of whom he said were provided drinks that had been laced with drugs at Combs' direction.
It's wild.
That is insane. That's crazy. And it's like, yeah. I mean, how many of these stories have we heard about powerful people who get away with behavior for so long mm-hmm. until there's some sort of nexus for like in this case, you got a scorned person you worked with and they were included in this criminal activity and now they're like turning on you. It's like, meh, don't feel bad for them. And again, from the New York Times, Homeland Security Investigations carried out the raids but did not provide details about the case, including whether Mr. Combs was a target or which criminal charges were being investigated. Mr. Combs, oh, it does say this, who is also known as Puff Daddy or Diddy, has been accused of sexual assault and sex trafficking in multiple civil lawsuits over the last several months. So it seems likely, putting the pieces together,
oh, yeah.
that it's not just like he's a tangent to the raids on his home, sorry.
Yeah, it sounds like after the lawsuit, and he says he has videos, then Diddy came out and said, no, that's just baloney, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he didn't use the term baloney. But then he said there's video, and this is obviously Homeland Security taking right. that seriously and saying, hey, we have some reason to believe this stuff is true.
Well, and because it's Homeland Security, that would suggest something that's sort of transnational in nature. So
sex
some sort of, yeah,
or
trafficking
drugs.
Or something like that that's coming in the country, out of the country, whatever it is. So that the fact that they're the ones who serve the warrants tells us a lot about what they're investigating.
Right.
So, okay, so we'll
Wild.
Keep our eye on that. That's insane. Mm-hmm. All right, is your retirement portfolio properly positioned to ride out the risk involved with 2024? Of course, we've got the election, continued global unrest. We have bizarre market fluctuations. So if you are nearing retirement or in retirement, you need to make sure that your retirement portfolio is positioned to weather that risk. So Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are having another risk management strategy live webinar this Thursday, March 28th. 3:30 p.m. It is totally free. You can register at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com, and you're going to hear about how they actively manage every portfolio, and they do it with Bulwark's risk management strategy, always seeking opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give you as much upside as possible. So don't miss Zach's free 2024 Outlook Live webinar on Thursday, March 28th. You can register now, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance does not guarantee future results. All right, before we get to questions and comments, look at this cute photo we got. I love when you guys send us pictures. Mike Dean, aka Old Sub Sailor, which is his handle that he comments on, and his dad, George, sent us a picture of them wearing their Make Common Sense Great Again hats from our merch store. He says, family factoid, my dad witnessed the first atomic test at Trinity site, White Sands Missile Range, from the front porch of the family ranch. He was 15 at the time. And Mike himself is a Navy vet of 23 years. Oh my gosh, I love this picture so much. Thanks for sending it. You guys look good in those hats. I bet you trigger people from a distance. Make Common Sense Great Again. Which, by the way, perfect opportunity to send people to our merch store. You want one of those sweet hats that Mike and his dad are wearing? UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. You can shop our merch store. And there's also a lot of other stuff, except don't look at the cup in the picture, because that cup is sold out.
Or the crop.
Well, whatever. You know, they'll get there. They'll see what's sold out and not sold out.
Hey, but this is limited edition. You have to buy it now because it is a limited edition. And we're going to come up with a whole new edition.
After 2024, of course it's limited. We put a date on it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm encouraging them to get it while they can.
Yep.
And then when we switch studios, move studios, maybe we'll restock with some sweatshirts. I've gotten lots of advice on what we should bring to our merch store.
You know what I want? Show people. Sorry, we're getting away. I know we're getting to more content now. You can come back to me. I just wanted to. I love these. Look at what Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle brought us. It's like this little
sweatshirt bag.
It's a sweatshirt bag. It says We Heart Seattle on it. I'm like, I love it so much. I need to make some of those. Anyway, move on.
Send us your ideas.
I also, before we get to comments, I had told you guys I was going to show you how to stop Instagram's efforts to block political content. So at some point last week, this was all over the place, that Instagram had instituted this new feature that automatically, if you have an Instagram account, hit a button in your settings that said limit political content. There was all this backlash against it. So Instagram has sort of softened it a little bit, but you still need to go into your settings and you need to actually go in there and change it. Nicole, do you have this graphic?
Yep.
Thanks. So here's what you do. You go to your settings on your Instagram account. You hit content preferences, and then you will see political content. And if you click that, it'll say limit political content from people you don't follow, or it'll say don't limit political content from people you don't follow. Now, this was where the change was, because Instagram, before people started freaking out about this on the internet, it said just limit political content or don't limit political content. So when I found out about it, I went here and mine was clicked, limit political content. That's what I put out is political content. And now it says from people you don't know. But anyway, if you don't want Instagram telling you what kind of political content you can and cannot handle, go in there and change it to don't limit political content. Because if you haven't changed it by default, it is going to be limiting your political content. So we need to do another one of those that has to do with Facebook and how to actually see the stuff we do, because Facebook thwarts us like crazy.
You know the trick.
I'll figure it out. Okay, let's get to questions and comments. Jack Hartstock with a $4.99 super chat. Let's do an undivided group event at a Mariners game this summer. Go M's. Oh, I like that idea. We were looking for some fun things to do, so maybe that's something. Fergie says, on Bob Ferguson, icing us out. Adam L. says, that response is entirely what's wrong with politics. They won't respond because of support for other candidates. Shame on them. And also, again, every freaking political candidate or governor or president, I'm going to be a governor for everyone. I'm going to be a president for everyone. This shows you're not. Like, around 40 to 50% of the people don't support you as a candidate. And so, well, more than that, if you add up who all the people they support. And so you're basically saying, like, you're not worth responding to. And look, again, I have been really hard on Bob Ferguson. I get it. But that's a very strange across-the-board rule. It would have been better for them if they just hadn't responded and just honestly like gave us the silent treatment. But now they just told us flat out what they're going to do. So crazy. Isaiah Goodland says, I don't want Bob as governor. He's too slippery. He can't be trusted. He's more interested in furthering his career than bettering the interests of the people. I agree. And again, if you said what you're saying you said, if you said what Drew Mickelson is saying you said, then show it to us. Like, what's the problem there? I don't get it. On media and their coverage of gang activity, Greg Olakis says, mainstream media is so deceiving and untruthful. Hell, I don't even trust the weather report from the mainstream media. Nightwolf says, but we have some of the strongest gun laws in the U.S. How do these two little darlings come by those guns? And again, you can have the strongest gun laws, but it's never going to stop people who want to use guns to hurt people from doing so. The very best thing we can do is throw the book at them, use the mandatory firearm enhancements that we have on the book. You put them on the books for a reason, because you wanted to stop some of the violence being perpetrated with guns and show that in our civil society, we can't tolerate that. So you have special enhancements, yet you have prosecutors who waive them all the time. We've done coverage of some of that. It's ridiculous. Is that RD? Yes. Looks like more than 10 rounds in that mag. Oh, mm-hmm. No. Yeah, see? You're not supposed to have more than 10 rounds in a mag. How did the 16-year-old gang member get a hold of it? On the dysfunction in Congress, Nancy Campbell says they should be required to serve out their terms unless for health reasons. Yeah, it'd kind of be hard. Like, how do you do that? Because then they would just not, you know, they'd be there physically but not in mind. So I don't want somebody in Congress who does not want to be there.
Sure. But maybe the job part. That's suspicious because I think Gallagher is taking a job with somebody with a big corporation that he may have or may not have helped with some of his policies.
Okay.
So maybe we could keep them from getting that kind of job.
There were rules already about that. Well, there's a limit. There's a certain amount of time before they can lobby, I think. There's some rules around that, but interesting.
It's very, very, it's scary. I mean, it is scary that people, I don't know about Gallagher, I don't know them very well, but it's scary that people are getting out for these reasons because who's going to stay?
Yeah, nobody's going to stay. Well, the crazy people are going to stay.
The crazy people.
Who are desperate for attention and headlines.
That's all it's going to run.
That's all they want to do. Mm-hmm. I want boring politicians. Like, bring me some boring politicians who are in there, like, crunching numbers and, hey, like, let's be good stewards of our money and keep people safe and all that. Like, that's what I want. Mm-hmm. On homeschooling, Deanna Sanderson says, I homeschooled four kids and work a home. I am homeschooling four kids and work a home-based business from 1994 to 2009. It doesn't take that much time. Four kids at different levels, teach core curriculum and change it based on the age of the kid. Four schools. So it sounds like you did homeschool. Mm-hmm. I homeschooled four kids. Good for you. That's amazing. I grew up with four kids in the home, and I can't even imagine my poor mother trying to homeschool us. What a nightmare that would have been.
Actually, this weekend at one of the events we were at, we met a lot of homeschool kids.
Oh, yes, we did.
All very involved in politics. So maybe that's a reason to homeschool your kids.
Right?
Homeschool your kids so we can have the next great generation of politicians.
I love it.
Because they were all homeschooled.
Yeah. And then they
were
like,
I don't think
that's
going to be your
job
if you're in public school.
So, all right. We're going to get to our closing sanity check in a moment. First, we've been talking about interest rates. And I know a lot of people are watching that closely, particularly people who want to buy a new home or sell a home. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, you know, he's sort of waiting as well because they want the real estate market to heat back up again. And that's going to happen when the Fed cuts interest rates. But we asked him, you know, what he believes will happen if the Fed does not cut interest rates in 2024.
If they stay where they're at right now, I actually think that values will stay closer to where they're at. We'll see lower appreciation. We'll see appreciation, but it'll be modest. But if they start to come back down, well, that's when I think we'll start to see more of the multiple offer situations and the bid ups in home sale prices.
Yeah, so a little bit of a waiting game, but the best thing you can do is make sure your home is ready to hit the market when the Fed does drop interest rates. Wes can help you with that. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. He's going to start by giving you a free market analysis so you can kind of get a good judge of how your home is going to perform when it does hit the market. And he can talk to you about things like their listing boost concierge service. You want to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home so you get better offers for it? Well, they can help you manage those projects. They can even help you pay for them up front. Takes all the stress away. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, NBC and MSNBC News talking heads are losing their ever-loving minds because NBC hired Ronna McDaniel to be a paid contributor. Well, the backlash may now lead to Ronna McDaniel losing that job before she ever really started it. Here's your sanity check for today. So, former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel leaves the RNC, and like so many people in the political life, segues directly into a job with Network News. But now her new job as a paid contributor might be at risk because so many of the liberal talking heads lost their minds about this hire. This is from Variety. NBC News executives expected to decide Ronna McDaniel's fate in a meeting. It says top executives from NBC News were expected to meet Tuesday to hash out the growing controversy around her recent hire, according to two people familiar with the matter, in a bid to stop a growing insurrection by the NBC Universal unit's editorial staff. In recent days, prominent anchors ranging from Chuck Todd to Rachel Maddow have spoken out against the hire on NBC News' Meet the Press, as well as on MSNBC, charging NBC News executives with giving a platform to McDaniel despite her efforts to help former President Donald Trump dismiss the integrity of the 2022 presidential election. So a bunch of NBC, MSNBC hosts have said this publicly, which I was like, that's a little brave, right? Question your boss's decision-making live on the air, but here's a couple clips.
If you care what I think about this, I will tell you the fact that Ms. McDaniel is on the payroll at NBC News, to me, that is inexplicable. I mean, you wouldn't you wouldn't hire a wise guy. You wouldn't hire a made man like a mobster to work at a DA's office, right? you wouldn't hire a pickpocket to work as a TSA screener. And so I find the decision to put her on the payroll inexplicable.
In this instance, NBC News, either wittingly or unwittingly, is teaching election deniers that what they can do stretches well beyond appearing on our air in interviews to peddle lies about the sanctity and integrity of our elections. What we've also said to election deniers is not just they can do that on our airwaves, but that they can do that as one of us, as badge-carrying employees of NBC News, as paid contributors to our sacred airwaves.
Our sacred airwaves. Oh, my God, give me a break. Here's the thing. I don't necessarily disagree with some of the points that they're making about not even just Ronna McDaniel, but about having these high-profile, politically connected figures, be they, you know, former White House press secretaries or former chairs of the RNC, immediately landing in a job at the network news agencies that had just been criticizing them or holding them accountable. I think there's some weird stuff there. And I mean, Jen Psaki. And this is why the kind of freak out makes me laugh, because they, of course, will only freak out when it's a Republican. But you plugged, if you're a real journalist, tried and true, you should also have an issue with them taking the White House press secretary, Jen Psaki, and plugging her directly into hosting her own show after she was holding the water for Biden and gaslighting and manipulating and doing everything she could when confronted with difficult questions to try to make sure the president of the United States was getting off the hook to the extent possible. That's the antithesis of journalism. And then you pluck that person up and you put them in a position to host an entire show. I didn't see these same talking heads losing their minds about that. So it might be different issues. You know, you go from having the president's mouthpiece to MSNBC, and you go from having the head of the RNC, a political figure who, you know, whatever their claims about 2020 were, who's now going to be a paid political contributor. I get that those are different scenarios, but I don't think one is particularly worse than the other. I mean, who is it? George Stephanopoulos. He used to be a press secretary for, what was it, Clinton? Was it Clinton? And so this is, I don't know if it was Clinton or, I think it was Clinton. Will you check on that? I'm pretty sure. But this is not uncommon, and you've already muddied the water. So you have to decide, are you okay with the water being muddied or not? At least in the case of Ronna McDaniel, she was going to be a paid contributor, commentator. She was going to give her opinion on Republican issues. And NBC hosts and MSNBC hosts, if she says something factually inaccurate, isn't that their job to correct her? Certainly, they'd be well within their right to be able to correct her and hold her accountable in that position for telling lies. But then Jen Psaki, that's arguably worse. She's got her own show. And so she's, what she has to say is going straight out to the people. There's no one there to fact check or to filter her. So anyway, like, look, if you have a problem with this practice, then stop the practice. But don't complain about it just when it happens to be a Republican who supported Donald Trump. Clinton? Yes. Clinton. I thought so. That has been your sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Don't forget to shop the merch store, and if you have not signed up to support our show already, why not? We're nice ladies. We're just making a living doing a podcast, saving the state of Washington. $5 a month. What an investment. What an investment. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.